Spark Your Fire podcast. Content discussed on this podcast is general in nature. Please seek specific advice from qualified professionals. Now, let's start with the quote of the week.
All external expectations, all pride, all fear of embarrassment or failure, these things just fall away in the face of death, leaving only what is truly important. Remembering that you are going to die is the best way I know to avoid the trap of thinking you have something to lose. You are already naked. There is no reason not to follow your heart.
Great listeners, welcome back to the pod. I've got Steve with me. Steve has been on our show in the past and is also a co-founder, shall I say, Steve, of Go Next Level Wealth. Is that right?
I'm sort of the partner there. I didn't found it. It was founded by Pete Warger. Mm-hmm. But I work with Pete very closely in our stock market program.
Since I had you last on our podcast, there has a lot that has happened with COVID and the markets shifting a little bit, trends change. So I wanted to talk a lot of things, but there's few points that I have shortlisted, which I wanted to get started on. The place where I thought it's worth starting is if we want to touch on Cantillon effect and explain what that is and how relevant it has become in the current market environment.
Okay, thank you. And thanks for the invitation to come back on your show. There's always interesting things happening in stock markets. The last 12 months have been very, very interesting from a whole raft of point of view. Mm-hmm. Not too many people predicted a global pandemic. So that's the first one. Seldom would someone have predicted that stocks would fall 35% in a month. That would be another one. Thirdly, probably nobody predicted that there would be a 35% reversal the next month. And over the last 12 months, the stock market has gone up in the US about 75%. Mm-hmm. And the economy has probably been in a fairly serious recession. So, you know, when you put all those things together, predicting markets is a pretty sort of tough job. Mm-hmm. But in terms of the Cantillon effect, really, I suppose, you know, the idea being when the government spends a lot of money, where does it go and who benefits? As you've probably seen in relation to the stock market, most of it has gone into the sort of FANG stocks, or the stocks that were perceived that would do well out of a lockdown. And it's probably fair to say that that's a fairly accurate assessment. Mm-hmm. The question is, I suppose in a lot of cases, is how broadly and how deeply that money has found its way into the economy. And I was thinking about it before, and when you have a look at the, a really important part is thinking about the distribution of the way the money gets dispersed. Mm-hmm. Now, in Australia, for example, we had JobKeeper and JobSeeker. So we gave money to people at an individual level, and that was extremely beneficial. Mm-hmm. Because that allowed people to continue to pay mortgages or to buy groceries and those sorts of things. So that's a fairly sort of equitable outcome, if I can put it to you that way.
Mm-hmm.
The other part where companies got huge amounts of money, and as we're now seeing, not all of them, but some of them have actually made a serious amount of money because they got handed $100 million check. Mm-hmm. And so there was, as you probably saw a few weeks ago, this backlash against them to say, well, hang on a second, you guys made a record profit and then you paid out another 60 to 70 million in dividends, and of that, the owner got 20 million. You guys didn't need that money. You could have given it back.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really important in a distributional sense of where the money goes. I'm loath to criticise governments in that sense that you know, a pandemic doesn't come along every day of the week. And so generally, most governments, even though they might have a pandemic plan, have been, you know, were caught metaphorically with their pants down. And so there was a serious rush to throw money into the markets and to sort of just without too much discrimination in the sense of, you know, listen, just throw money at everybody, all right, and just keep the joint afloat. And stock investors, some took advantage of that. And, of course, that that excited the market to move into, you know, Zoom technologies. And why was that? Well, everybody, you know, we're never back to the office. All right, well, we better short real estate and we better go long Zoom technologies. So naturally enough, those sorts of things look self-fulfilling and correct for a while because, you know, you buy it, the price goes up and you go, oh, I must have been correct. So whether that happens or whether that stays over the long term is probably the interesting part about will people go back to the cities? And the distribution is really important from there. I usually like to keep my eye on the sort of top 1%, if I can put it to you that way, because that sort of stuff usually trickles down into what the middle classes will do. So if the really wealthy people say, look, I don't want a city office in New York anymore, or I'll maintain a presence there, but look, you'll find me in the Hamptons now because, you know, I can afford to live away from society because I don't want to be in a lift if somebody coughs. You know, so, and they can afford to do that. So the distributional effects, I don't think we've seen the end of it yet, but I think it's been heavily weighted towards the wealthy. And we're seeing stories like that. So is it having an impact? Absolutely. And I would say it's skewed much more towards or much more favourably towards the wealthy than it has been towards the people who, you know, genuinely need the money.
Fair enough. So basically it's in nutshell, rich getting richer, poor getting poorer kind of situation. Yeah. How do you value the stock markets currently? I mean, it's a very broad question, but do you think that overall the markets, and when you look at things like Buffett indicator and all, do you think the markets overall currently are overvalued because of what's happened in the last couple of months or almost a year now with the currency being devalued? And you can see that in the stocks, basically, especially with the stimulus checks that you were talking about that have been issued.
It's a great question. The at the moment, and it takes a little bit of history to understand where we've come from to get to where we are at the moment. And it's I think it's quite critical that people grasp the whole story. Now, first of all, we have the US market, as you say, as an extremely high valuation. Now, it's been climbing for some time. So it's not like we woke up 12 months ago and went, oh, look at that, the stock market's doubled, right? And as you know, and we probably discussed last time, was I used the cyclically adjusted price earnings ratio, the Shiller-Cape ratio. Now, that tells me what I expect to earn over the next 10 years. It doesn't tell me what I'm going to earn over the next 12 months. So that's the timeline is very, very important about when you invest. So what Shiller is sort of roughly saying now is the CAPE ratio is about 36. The long-term average we know it's about 17. So we're roughly double the average. So if we were to go back to the long-term average, the stock market would have to drop 50-odd percent. Now, every time we've been at this level, indeed, that's what's happened. Right? Now, what happens invariably at these times, such as 2000, when it reached 44, 2007, when it reached about 27, and currently now at about 36, you often hear people say, ah, yes, it's not working because of, you know, various reasons. Interest rates are low, okay? And because interest rates are low, that means valuations should be higher.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very, very sensible argument if that argument indeed holds. Now, when you look back at history and you look at the theoretical assumptions, that doesn't hold.
Mm-hmm.
So why, when people, you hear this general argument, oh, well, it's okay for CAPE to be at 36 and stocks to have PEs of 50s and 60s because, you know, interest rates are low. Well, interest rates are low because the economy is terrible. Now, if the economy is terrible, then that means that companies are not doing that well.
Mm-hmm.
So you see, when you've got to look at it in relativity. Now, with regards to the money printing argument, this is where we might get a bit controversial. Modern monetary theory says that it's not money printing. And there's two parts to this which are important. The first part is that it is an asset swap, okay? So the Federal Reserve says to Bank of America, I'll buy your bonds and I'll give you some money and I'll put it in your reserves. Okay. Now I take the bond and I'll throw it in the back room. Okay. Now the idea is the incentive is for Bank of America to say, oh, well, now we've got all this cash. Right. We better go out and lend it to somebody. Okay. So that may cause a rise in asset prices, provided somebody borrows that money. Otherwise, it just sits in their reserves. And this is my own opinion from here on in. What I believe is happening is if you have a look at the distribution, Jazz, of the ownership of the stock market, the top 1% of the wealthy people own about 50% of the stock market. The bottom 80% own very little. Mm-hmm. So what I suspect is happening is wealthy people who can afford to borrow, who are good credit risks, are borrowing because rates are so low and speculating.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why would they do that? Well, it's showing up in property prices in the US. So, for example, property prices are very, you know, frothy, shall we say. How could they be frothy when the economy is so bad? You would see property bubbles in places like Germany, in Korea. Australia's looking, you know, strong, shall we say, in Sydney and Melbourne. There's been a huge rebound.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of it is based on the mentality or the underlying psychology where what we come out of COVID, everybody said, we've got a vaccine, right, things are going to get better. Oh, okay, well, if things are going to get better, I better buy some assets because the price is going to go up. Regardless of saying, well, hang on, the economy is still on life support and there's a lot of poor people in America who are in poverty and there's, you know, Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos up the top there feasting away on everything, but things are going to get better. So I agree partially that some of that money is finding its way into the markets and making asset speculation. The serious issue is it's not getting to the people who desperately need it. And so that's a really, really big problem for down the track, because what you end up with, Jazz, is saying, look, the BMWs are booming. Right, because all the wealthy are, you know, upgrading the Beamers. What about, you know, GM? Oh no, they're a poor person's car, and the poors are still catching the bus. So, you know, that's terrible. So you're getting this economy that is servicing the rich people and is very lucrative. And at the other end, you've got sort of the Walmart economy where the poor are just surviving. But they're not growing at any great rate. But the economy is continuing to expand slowly because the wealthy are continuing to spend and to borrow and spend and push up asset prices.
Steve, what are your thoughts on reflation this year? Obviously, GDP was impacted last year. Things are hopefully going to get back to normal with the vaccine and all that stuff. Assuming they do, how do you trade this reflation trade, or basically use it to your advantage?
Yeah, good question. I think I've always been, as an investor, I've always focused on valuation and on price. And what I mean by that is, when I look at an investment, I say, what am I getting for my money? And so when I look around the world, I see a lot of things that are very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are two things that I think are probably quite good. And again, let me remind you, I'm a 10-year, 5-10-year, 15-year investor. I'm not a speculator where I'm looking to sell in September. Over the last 10 years, commodities have had a pretty average return, and they've been below par. If I take you a step back from 1999 to 2000, from 1999, sorry, to 2010, from 1990 to 2000, the developed world, or the US, did really well. From 2000 to 2010, emerging markets did really well, and the US didn't do very well. Now, part of the reason why was because in 2000, the US was at 44 as a CAPE, and emerging markets were cheap.
Mm-hmm.
We then had the commodities boom from 2000 to about 2010 or through there. And, of course, emerging markets did very well. Now, in 2010, the US, after the global financial crisis, was cheap and commodities were expensive. And so what you see is the US does well for a decade, then the emerging markets do well for a decade, then the US does well for a decade. So the US has had, as we said before, a great 10 years, about 600%. The emerging markets, not so much. Now, commodities have also not had a very good decade. So going forward, from 2020 to 2030, I would expect commodities and emerging markets to outperform the US. Mm-hmm. And within the commodity space, I think where my personal opinion is, I think where you want to be looking is more of the niche kind of metals. So rare earths, lithium, tungsten, platinum, gold, silver. But again, as you're probably aware, some of those have had a very good run in the last, 12 months. So again, you can't just say, Steve said they're going to go great for 10 years. Great, I'll buy some and, I'll make a lot of money. It always comes back to saying, is there value at this price? No. Okay, well, that's all right. I'll wait 12 months. And if it falls, then I might buy some.
Mm-hmm.
So again, there is always places to make money. The question is, what's the price you're paying for the return that you're getting?
Mm-hmm. I do want to touch on emerging markets, Steve. How do you, for average investor who understands stock markets just enough, right? How do you go about investing in emerging markets? What's the best way? Get the most out of it.
We favor using ETFs, exchange traded funds. Now, the reason why we like that, Jazz, is because most people think investing is very complex. Oh, I'm going to buy, let me give you an example. I'm going to buy a Turkish telecom company, okay, and I hold it, and its name is Turkcell. Now, if you're a sort of fundamental investor, you say, oh, right, okay, I better figure out the growth rate and how many subscribers it's got and, what's the cost of capital and, I better do a discounted cash flow and all of these sorts of things. And this is the way I do it. Okay. Is turkey cheap? Yes. It's on a cape ratio of about 7 or 8. Okay, well, that's good. That means it will probably rise. Okay, good. Okay, and what about the telecom sector? Yes, globally, the telecom sector has been cheap for a couple of years, and I've got a lot of telecom stocks. Okay, and it's probably got a lowish PE, and so it will probably rise as well. Oh, okay. Now let's have a look at the Turkcell. Biggest telecommunications company in Turkey. Okay. Has it got a lot of debt? Well, it's got a bit, but it can handle that with the cash flow. Okay, what's the PE? Fairly low. Does it pay a dividend? Yes, it does. All right. That to me says the ducks are lining up in my favour. I've got a cheap country, I've got a cheap sector, and I've got a cheap country. Now, fundamental investors will say, ah, yes, but, you know, you've got to know about the debt ratios and the depreciation and all this sort of stuff. Is that correlated to the stock price? Now, largely it's not. So what we say to people is, look, these days you can go and buy an ETF which represents a country, Russia, Pakistan, Brazil, Chile, Poland, all of those emerging markets. If you go and look at the cheap ones, according to the CAPE ratio, at the moment being Russia, Poland, Korea, Pakistan, Turkey, if you said to yourself, well, look, I don't know much about the stock market, I would say to you, all right, we'll just buy a little bit of each of those cheap ones, okay? And let's have a look at them in 12 months' time. Now, if they've made money, sell them and now buy the new cheap ones.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That's a really simple way for investors to profit from investing without saying, oh, look, I don't know anything about, you know, depreciation and return on equity and what's a balance sheet again and why do I need to know all this? So what we say is, look, it's essentially the same as saying, I don't know anything about Australian stock companies, so I'll just buy them all.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll buy them all by buying the Vanguard Australian Shares ETF and there you go, I'm now an investor. Do I need to know about BHP or Telstra or, you know, small cap companies or Afterpay? No. What you need to do is just say, I'm going to make steady returns. What you often get, Jazz, is at the top of a bull market, which is what we have now, is a lot of people looking at things like GameStop. How do I get rich in a week? Right? I'll tell you how you get rich in a week. You take all your money down to the casino and you give it the best shot you can, right? That's how you get rich in a week. If you want to get rich over 10 or 20 years, then you use the stock market and you invest prudently.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's a very, very big difference between the two because generally young people, predominantly young men, get caught up in the fervor of GameStop and, you know, all these sorts of things and start to think they're day trading in the stock market again and putting all their results on TikTok. Mm-hmm. So what I do is say, no, let's just build your wealth, right? And, you know, you're financially independent, retire early. You build your wealth by going where the value is. And as you've stated before, there's value in emerging markets. And so if you go there and say, let me be prudently putting my money in the market, you will do just fine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. That's good advice over there. Now, in general, over the last couple of years, Steve, we have seen tech stocks to be outperforming or have done exceptionally well, likes of Zoom, and there's a lot more, right, Zero. What is your take on 2021? And maybe if you want to go beyond that, but
yes,
the sectors that will outperform and whether tech will be still whether the tech sector will be rotated or it still will be the performer, one of the best performers.
Yeah, yeah. Again, when you look at market history, everybody starts talking about the latest thing. Now, tech stocks have done wonderfully. But when you go back and look over a history, you will find that tech stocks have enormous volatility.
Mm-hmm.
And what that means is you're either going to get a really big winner or you're going to get the losers. Now, when you look at those tech companies, you can't say to yourself, there's going to be 10 Facebooks, right? Because as you probably know, but with your experience, they have the network effect.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's what makes them profitable. Everybody's on Facebook. Why? Well, because everybody else is on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But you can't have 10 Facebooks, right? Because then you don't have a network effect.
Mm-hmm.
So will it outperform? It will until it doesn't. And that gives zero help to anybody. Mm-hmm. But what I say is this: the price you are paying is extremely high. And so we old guys like to say it's price for perfection. So just to give you an example, you know, Facebook is a great company and it does this and it does that. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, Mark Zuckerberg is a genius. The Australian government has just said to them, we want you guys to start paying for content.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's a very, very thin edge of a wedge that may say, actually, we might start saying to them, we want them to start paying a bit more tax.
Mm-hmm.
And we might say to Google, listen, that search engine of yours is just a little bit too big and we want to work out a way to, you know, get some competition in there.
Mm-hmm.
So things are always extremely bright and at the top and you can't see a downside. But what I can tell you is this: everything cycles. And when airlines were invented and bought into the stock market, they were the new technology. Oh, why would you catch a bus if you can fly?
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, smartphones or radios or telephones. So when you go back and look through history, what you see is there's always a new technology. This time it's electric vehicles,
mm-hmm.
or it's drones and, you know, all of those sorts of things. Tech companies, tech's going to run the world. It's all going to be robots and Internet of Things and, you know, interconnectedness. Now, that may well be true, but the question you ask yourself is, as an investor, am I paying and will I get a good return for the money that I'm outlaying?
Mm-hmm.
What you often find with tech stocks, Jas, is they pay very, very few dividends. And so what you're relying on is the capital growth in the stock value.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you must sell that stock or part of it to get that value.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's a really, really important part because people will say, for example, and I'll use this as an example, oh, I bought Amazon at a dollar and now it's, you know, $7. Wow, that's fantastic. And then it falls to 80 cents. Did you sell it? No, well, no, I didn't. I was waiting for, oh, okay. So what I'm saying to people is if they're not paying a dividend, you are relying on the capital growth of that company. Now, that may well happen. I'm not arguing against it. But what I'm saying is when you look at things like Amazon with a PE of 90, and remember, Amazon in the 2000 crash lost 95% of its value. Most people now would say, yeah, but I don't see that happening. And my argument is, I know, you're the same person who didn't see the 35% fall in February last year happening either. So what I'm saying is it's very difficult to predict the future based on what's happening now.
Mm-hmm.
And generally, you want to rely on mean reversion because when you look at history, as I've done, and you sort of go, oh, this is like what they call the nifty 50 stocks
mm-hmm.
in the 60s. Oh, and what happened to them? Well, they crashed. Oh, and this was like the, you know, the tech stocks in the dot-com era in 2000. And what happened to those? Oh, well, they all crashed too. So, mm-hmm. you know, for example, Microsoft, if you'd have bought in 2000, you had to wait 14 years to get your money back.
Mm-hmm.
Now, people will say, oh, yeah, but you would have bought more. Really?
Mm-hmm.
Really? You'd have lost 50% and gone, oh, yeah, I'm right in. Not really, because most people were speculating.
Mm-hmm.
Now, interestingly enough, through that period, Microsoft continued to earn more and more money and be a more and more dominant company. So, in other words, you can have a brilliant company, but if you pay too much for it, you're going to be waiting a long time to get your money back, even if the price rises.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, but, you know, look, there will be winners and losers. Who they are, I, you know, got a little bit of an idea, but generally you get surprised by, you know, you think back, Jazz, 2 years, and if I'd have said, Jazz, I've got a great company for you, Zoom Technologies, you'd have gone, what? What, that stuff like Microsoft Teams and all that stuff? Yeah, yeah, it's going to be a fantastic investment. Most people would go, no, mate, don't see it. Everybody goes to the office, right? Fast forward 2 years, now we're all going, oh, it's all Zoom's genius company. So do you see what I mean? It's you've got to get there before the crowd gets there.
Mm-hmm.
That's very, very hard to do because now everybody's talking about Zoom and Tesla and, you know, those tech companies. So in other words, the easy money's been made.
So is it fair to say that these are more of asymmetric bets where you can lose a good chunk of your money or it can go 10x, 100x, whatever that figure is? And Zoom is the example. Tesla is the example for that.
Yes, yes, yes. Tesla, look, I've got no doubt that, you know, Elon Musk is a very bright man. No problems with that at all. And, I'm ambivalent on Tesla cars,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not a car, you know, I'm not a car man myself. So electric vehicles, okay, yeah, probably. But mm-hmm. I remember talking about electric vehicles in 2008.
Yeah.
And I said then, oh, we're all going to be driving electric vehicles by 2015. Mm-hmm. Now, here we are 2021. There's still a tiny portion of the market and the self-driving aspect is a long way away.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm saying is we tend to, in all cycles, project out the rosiest conclusion. Now, does that mean Tesla's not going to be there in 10 years? Absolutely not. It will probably be there. Mm-hmm. But will it be a good investment buying stock now in 10 years' time? That I'm not sure of, and I'd be more confident to say I doubt it rather than, yes, it'll be $1,000 or, you know, $1,500 a share.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. But for getting individual stocks in general, the sector that will perform over the next year or so, are you bullish on one sector over the other or like commodities as an example?
Yes. Yep. I think if you have a look at commodities, oil has had a good run, but again, it might fall on a surprise again and then give you a chance to get back in. Some financials are cheap. I'm a little bit worried about some financials because of the state of the global banking system, which is probably another topic for another time. Telecommunications look to be quite good.
Mm-hmm.
So all up, I think, as you say, commodities are probably be the place to be. And if you're prudent in not rushing in too much, keeping your eye on things such as dividend yields to provide you with a little bit of stability of income.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, and I'm not recommending this as a stock, you can look at something like Lukoil in the Russian market, which will pay, you know, now it's about a 4 or 5% dividend.
Mm-hmm.
I prefer to do that than I would to say I'm going to look at some fracking company in Texas with, you know, three wells and, you know, is hoping to crack it big. I mean, may well do, but that's not the type of investor I am. I prefer to say, let me continue just to build my wealth steadily
mm-hmm.
rather than take shots at the, you know, I'm either going to be rich or I'm going to be broke.
And within the commodities sector, and this is not a financial advice by any means, but is there any particular stocks or ETF that you will recommend?
Look, I think I think in the energy space, you can always just go with XLE, which is the broad US energy sector. Mm-hmm. Now, as people would say, well, hang on, mate, you just said that the Cape ratio is, you know, 36. So if you said to me, oh, Steve, I've got $10,000, what do? I might say to you, all right, well, I'll tell you what, Jess, put $5,000 and put $5,000 in cash. Mm-hmm. Now, if your $5,000 goes to $4,000, put another $1,000 in. Mm-hmm. Okay, and if it goes down again, well, just keep feeding your money in, okay, and you'll do well over the longer term. Mm-hmm. In terms of rare earths, I'll declare that I own some rare earth stocks. I won't mention what they are, mm-hmm. But that is the place to look. And if you dig down and do some serious research, you will find, let me just give you an example. Yesterday, Joe Biden came out, the American president came out and said, we are going to look at the rare earth supply chain. Mm-hmm. And the reason why is because China has all the expertise. Mm-hmm. Now, what people may or may not know is rare earths go into, you know, electric vehicles and all that sort of stuff. Okay, that's important. And it goes into smartphones. I'll tell you what else it goes into. It goes into smart bombs. So America relies on about 80% of their smart bombs for the Chinese rare earths. So that's like saying, we're going to come and bomb you. Could you just send me the materials so we can build the bombs to come and bomb you with, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think that's going to stay like that, to be quite honest. Mm-hmm. So I think what you'll find is there will be some potentially lucrative opportunities through the supply chain in rare earths, both in Europe mm-hmm. and America. Mm-hmm. And to make it more broad, the reason why I say that is because I think we are heading back to a sort of Cold War stage two, where when I was a kid, it was America versus Russia. Now it's America versus China. Mm-hmm. And I think it's absolutely obvious that that's what's going on. And with Joe Biden signaling that they are looking at resource security for national security reasons, is telling you or is signifying to you that they are going to lock down a rare earth supply chain, probably between Japan, Australia, and the United States. Mm-hmm. You know, as the allies, as we call them.
Yeah, and you can look there within the share price of likes of Linus. Great, great insights, Steve. I'm being cautious of the time. I've got a lot more questions, but I know we're going to wrap this up. Anything that you would like to leave listeners with before we close this?
No, just thank you for the opportunity. I always enjoy talking to you about stocks and stuff. Look, at this stage, just what I always say to young people is the same thing. You've got plenty of time. Don't do stupid things like trying to get rich overnight buying lottery tickets because, you know, the bros down the street are buying them and they're making money. Mm-hmm. What you want to be is you may get lucky once or twice, but to do that over, you know, a 20 to 25 year investment career probably won't happen. What will happen is your skill will dominate over your luck, and so don't get the two confused because if you do, you'll end up losing a lot more than you will make. So, you know, study the stock market, study history, and be very patient, and I almost guarantee you will succeed over the long term.
Words of wisdom. Super appreciate your time, Steve. We'll have you back at some point again in future as the markets pan out, especially the commodities sector that we discussed towards the end. And for the listeners, play safe, stay safe, and we'll see you guys next time. Cheers.